We hear on Daf Tesvav and Aleph, about 15 lines down from the top. The first wooden line is Inish, and we're up to Vesavar Shmuel. Remember, just to remind you that Shmuel is of the opinion that if the mocher sold a stolen field, in this case, to the lokeach, since that sale is invalid, even though the nigzal will take away this field and confiscate it from the hands of the lokeach with its shvach, with its improvement, nevertheless, when the lokeach goes back to the mocher and he wants to demand reimbursement, he can only be reimbursed, according to Shmuel, for the value of the field, the tmei karka, the tmei sada, but not the additional appreciation, the shevach. And the reason for that is because it's mechzei karibis. It looks like the mocher is getting back, because again, on what basis is he holding on to this money? It's a kind of a quasi loan, and he's getting back from the loan more than what he took. In other words, he received whatever the Dmei Karka was, and that he is now the Lover, the Mocher is the Lover, in the sense that he's getting money from the Lokeach, and what he's returning to the Lokeach is that amount plus, because he's giving the extra Shvach. So the Gemara now posits a Stira, what seems to be a contradiction, to Shmuel. V'chisovar Shmuel, the Sava Shmuel lokeach migazlon lesle shvacha. In other words, when the lokeach goes back to the mocher who sold him a stolen piece of property, he can only get paid dmei karka, but not dmei shvacha. Omar le, we have a recorded dialogue between Shmuel and Rav Chinina bar Shilat. Rav Chinina was a sofer, and Shmuel instructed him, Imlich, when you're writing a shtar mecher, then ask the mocher for his agreement, uksov, and write on the shtar mecher that he, the mocher, is meshabed himself, that if, in event, this karka will be confiscated from the lokeach, he will pay him what we call a pitsui, you know, he's going to make up for that. And what does he pay from mishufra? Shufra means the best of his nechasim, the best of his karka, and shivcha uperi, not only the dmei karka, but also the shvach and the peros. In other words, let's say the lokeach paid 1,000 for this karka that was stolen. The karka went up in value, and in addition to going up in value, it also produced fruit. And this karka was now confiscated, of course, by the nigzal. The lokeach can go back to the mocher to claim not only the value that he paid for this karka, but also the shvach and the peri. Now, it's not clear in terms of the context of this responsibility, this achrayus, the shibut that the mocher is taking upon himself, if he agrees, whether that shibut is to protect the lokeach from a situation of A, gzela, where the field was stolen, or B, where the field was confiscated from the lokeach by virtue of an outstanding loan that the mocher owed to his creditor, to his bal chov. And now the bal chov, in event that the mocher can't pay up his chov, he goes to the mishubadim, he goes to the karka, which was leaned, L-I-E-N, which is leaned to the bal chov. So the Gemara says, b'mai, ibe bal chov, if the case of this gvias karka, the karka that was taken away from the lokeach, was done so by bal chov, is mi yisle peri. Can it be that the lokeach is coming back to demand from the mocher the value of the peros, as if to say that the Balchov himself collects peri, but that's not true. V'amar Shmuel Balchov goves ha-shvach, shvach in aval peros lo. Although it's true that the Balchov can collect from the lokeach, can confiscate from the lokeach the karka, the land, the field, as it is at the time of the gvio, meaning even though it appreciated its value, that's called shevach. And again, the lokeach will have to go back to the mocher, in this case, to claim and sue him, to reimburse him and compensate him not only for the dvei karka, but also for the shevach, because that shevach was taken away by the balchov. And again, in this case, we're not invalidating the sale. The mocher had every right to sell this karka, and therefore there's no issue of halva here, where the lokeach is giving money to the mocher almost like a loan, and therefore there's no issue of mechse karibis. But nevertheless, Shmuel said that the rights of the balchov are limited. He can collect the karka in lieu of his loan that's not being paid out by the mocher, the lover, and he can even collect the karka with its shevach, but he cannot collect peri. That far, the balchov doesn't have rights to collect from lokeach peri. That's according to Shmuel. And as we discussed in the last shiur, the reason is that the takana of the chachom shalotin ol delos b'nei lovin was established to protect the balchov and give him security. We're going to go one step further. We're going to allow him to collect not only the karka, but even the shvach karka. But peros, let's say the peros gemurin, are not really part of the karka itself. The shvach is part of the karka. And if that be the case, it's impossible to say that this horah, this mandate that Shmuel gave to the sofer, to Rabbi Chinan of Bar Shilat, was talking about a lokeach who bought karka that was meshubad to the malva. Now, you could have answered the Gemara's question by saying that the lokeach is pressing the mocher to give him security that'll cover a broad scope, even the possibility that the karka was stolen, because again, the lokeach has to consider all possibilities and protect himself. And in event that it was stolen, then he wants achrayus on the part of the mocher for the shevach. In other words, for the peros. Even though we said that the balchov doesn't collect peri, but maybe when Shmuel instructed Rav Chinan of the sofer to write achrayus, he had in mind the possibility of gzela, that the nigzal would take away this field from the lokeach because it was stolen. And the answer is that according to Shmuel Shita, in the case of stolen sada, the lokeach cannot come back to be tover the mocher, neither demei shevach nor demei peros. Either one of the two is mechse karibis, because as we said over and over again, the sale is completely invalid. It would have been pretty sharp if we could have said that the achrayus for shvach was in event of a balchov, because a balchov does collect shvach, and peri for in event that it was stolen, a stolen field, and the nigzal comes. But the answer is that even if the nigzal does collect shvach, even if that were to be true, which we said it was, but nevertheless, the lokeach certainly can't go back and demand from the mocher shvach. So the scribe writing shvach as part of the achrayus to the mocher, that can make sense with regard to a balchov, because the balchov has rights to collect shvach, and the lokeach has rights to go back to the malva and demand reimbursement for the shvach. But what Shmuel told Rav Chinina to include not only Shvach but Peri, that doesn't work out, because in the case of Balchov, he can't collect Peri. And in case of a Gazlan, even if he can collect Peri, but Lokech has no recourse to get reimbursed from the Mocher and have the Mocher pay him back, not only to make Kaka, but add to it to make Peri. So the Gemara says, El Olav Lokech mi Gazlan. Let's assume that Shmuel's instruction to Rav Chinina to the Sofer was to cover the Lokeach for a case where the field was stolen. The Nigzal takes the Peri as well, not only just the Karka, but also the Peri. Now the Lokeach goes back to collect from the Mocher, not only the Karka, the Dmei Karka, but also the Dmei Peri. And let's make it a package, Peri and Shevach. Well, this is not the way we understood it in Shmuel's context. You remember Rav Nachman, in yesterday's discussion, interpreted Shmuel that Lokech could never go back to the Mocher and demand compensation for Dmei Shvach, and for that matter, for Dmei Peros, because that would always be Mechzei Keribis. And Rav Nachman interpreted Shmuel that even if the Mocher explicitly took upon himself, with all the kinyanim in the world, to reimburse the Lokeach for Shvach and Peri, nevertheless he's not allowed to do so. He's not allowed to give one dime beyond the Dmei Karka that was paid by the Lokeach to purchase this field, because it would always be Mechzei Keribis. And therefore, Shmuel established that the maximum the Lokeach could get back in claiming from the Mocher is only monies that basically are being given back to him, which is a Piron Halva, Piron Chov. As soon as you add any Tosefes, whether it's because of Peros or because of Shvach, that's already Mechzei Keribis. So the Tosefes, which was not paid by the Lokeach at the time of the sale, is Mechzei Keribis. And the only way that we can possibly come up with some justification for this statement of Shmuel to Rav Chinina to allow the Lokeach to force, to compel the Mocher to agree in the context of this sale to reimburse the Lokeach above and beyond what he paid for the field, because he now invested in the field and the field appreciated in value and it grew peros, is to try to find a situation where there is no Mechzei Keribis. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef came up with a scenario in which there's no Mechzei Keribis. Even according to Shmuel, the Mocher could be mischayv, he could take upon himself a commitment to pay the Lokeach not only to make Karka, but also the Peris. Hachamayaskinon kigon sheyeshlo Karka. Now, the premise of the Gemara is that when the Mocher pays or compensates Lokeach for a very bad sale, the field was stolen, was a stolen field. Again, the field itself is gone, meaning it's already been taken by the Nigzal. So the Mocher obviously has a chiyuv, an outstanding financial obligation to pay the Lokeach for his loss. He can do so in one of two ways. Either he can pay with currency, with cash, or he can pay with a piece of karka that has the value of what he owes the Lokeach, to compensate the Lokeach. The karka now becomes a means of payment, a mode of payment. And in this case, since he's not giving back mos to the Lokeach, it doesn't look like ribis. In other words, swallowed up within the value of the karka that now the Mocher is giving as compensation to the Lokeach is the value of Shevach, value of Peros. No one's going to say it looks like ribis, because it's hidden, so to speak, in the value of the karka. Now, again, it could be that part of the piron is in mos, and part of the piron, the balance of the piron, would be in karka. Or alternatively, let's say this karka was in the possession of the mocher at the moment that he sold the other field to the lokeach, and now the shibud is chal to the lokeach to reimburse him for a stolen property, if that's what the field was, from his karka, meaning the karka of the mocher is mishubad. Now what the mocher could do is he could sell the karka on the open market and use that those mos to pay back the lokeach. That doesn't look like ribbis. So the mechzek ribbis only applies if and when the mocher gives damim, he gives mos back to the lokeach, but it's not nikar, it doesn't look like ribbis when the mocher returns to the lokeach, not damim, but rather a piece of karka, even though that karka has a greater value, which the increment of which reflects the shvach and the peiros, which were taken away from the lokeach, and now the mocher has a chrais to reimburse him. Abaye is not a happy camper. Amalei Abaye, if we're worried about ribbis, it's irrelevant if the payment is karka, meaning one karka is being switched for another karka, and the karka that the love, in this that the malve, in this case the lokeach, gave to the mocher, is being swapped for a karka, and that karka is worth less than the karka that's being returned to the lokeach as payment of that loan, in quotation marks. V'chimuta lilvo sa b'sa. Let's say, for example, this is a sugya later on of ribbis in Perek Ezu Neshech. If a person lends a saw, that's a certain volume of, let's say, wheat, and the love who's borrowing this wheat is going to return a different saw, a different wheat, in other words, not the same wheat that he borrows, but other wheat which is of the same volume, that you're not allowed to do. That also becomes a ribbis problem, saw b'saw, insofar as the possibility that the chachomim, that the halach is worried about, that the saw, that the loaf is now returning to the malva, has gone up in value since the time of the alva, and therefore when the malva gets back a saw chitin, he's getting some extra money, it's above and beyond the chiyuv piron chov. Since the Dmei Piron now are more than Dmei Milva, that becomes ribbis. And here also, if the Malva is the Lokeach, and he's getting back for the Karka that he gave, he's getting another piece of Karka from the Mocher, in this case the Lova, then that's Karka B'Karka, that's already Saw B'Saw. And in fact, in this case, the Mocher is giving back a piece of Karka that is worth more than the Karka that he received. So the Gemara answers, Amalei, Rav Yosef says to Abaye, you know what? Even the halach of sa b'sa, that isur, as formulated by the Gemara later on, Adaf Ayin Hey, that has its limitations too. Why? Hasam, when did the Chachamim prohibit sa b'sa? That's in the halva case. You know, it's mamish where you lend someone, a guy comes to me and says, give me a dozen eggs. And if there's a real fluctuation in the market price, then when he borrows my dozen eggs, then he goes to the store to buy a dozen eggs to pay me back and return the loan, that is mechzik ribbis insofar as the dozen eggs have now gone up in value. So I gave him a dozen eggs at 100 and he's given me a dozen eggs at 150. That's mechzik ribbis. But hacha here, we didn't begin with alva. We began with a mecher, with a mekach. The mocher actually sold him a piece of karka, and the lokeach paid a certain value. And now the mocher has taken upon himself a chrayis to compensate the lokeach for that money, for that he bought for the karka, and the additional shevach. That already doesn't look like ribbis. In other words, that's already a double, like a trade derabbanan here. Number one, sub b'sa itself is not ribbis. I mean, he borrowed a dozen eggs, he gave him back a dozen eggs. So that's only mechzik ribbis. And the Chacham prohibited that kind of halfa. But to say that they prohibited even a mecher, because it turns out that the mecher is batel and mevutal because it was stolen goods, and then we convert the dmei karka into alva, which the mocher is kaviyochel receiving from the lokeach, and on top of that we're saying that he pays back in karka, and the karka is worth more than the dmei karka that the lokeach shelled out for this karka, that's mechzik ribis. Says Rav Yossi, that's already going too far. So that the limitation rule, the proviso, the condition in which sa b'sa is prohibited is an outright explicit alva, but not in this case, which was money was given to the mocher as dmei mekach. But then l'mafreya, it turns out that since it was a stolen field, it became alva. And I'm going to add that the mocher can't pay back in karka because that also is mechzik ribis, and that's also in sa b'sa. That far, Sabasa doesn't go. Sabasa is only an Isur when there was Alva from the get-go. That's where the object that transferred hands, that went from one hand to the other, from that of the Malva to love, was done so as Alva. Ika Diamri, there's a slight change in the second version of Rav Yosef. From Rav Yosef, Hachamai Eskinon, Kigon Shekonu Miyodo. In the second Lishner, Rav Yosef came up with another scenario where we can circumvent the Mechse Karibis problem. Shmuel, when he mandated Rav Chinina to write up this Shtar Mecher with Achrayus, at that moment, even before the sale was enacted, the Mocher took upon himself with a separate Kinyan, right, that's called the Kinyan Sudar, to pay for Shvach. This is not a Chashash Ribis. Why? Because this Chayvus came even before the Mocher received payment. So that's a very interesting situation here, where the, you know, normally what happens is the Lover agrees within the context of normal ribis, I should say classical ribis, is where the lover agrees to pay to the malva more than what he's getting, but more than the loan that he's receiving. That's a ribis issue. But here what's happening is even before any monies were changed hands, meaning the lokech hasn't paid a dime yet to the mocher as purchase money, already at that point, before the purchase money was transferred, purchase money which will turn into a halva later, there was a hischaivus with a kinyan on the part of the mocher. Again, what's unclear is why Shmuel had to instruct Rav Chanina to write down this kinyan in a shtar after he gets permission from the mocher of doing so. L'chora, once the mocher made this kinyan, which is called the kinyan sudar, the halacha doesn't require the sofer to ask permission to write that down in the shtar. That's called stam kinyan l'ksiva omed. The power of a kinyan, meaning a kinyan sudar, is such that it doesn't require hamlacha. You don't have to ask the mischayev who made this kinyan sudar, which is called kanum yado, to the sofer doesn't have to ask the mischayev to give him permission to write that down in the shtar. That's called Stam Kinyan L'Ksiva Omeid. But Tosus here, Dir Maskel Kigon, makes the distinction, which has to be analyzed, between a Dover She'eno Be'en and a Dover Be'en. On a Dover She'eno Be'en, that's when, well, I'm sorry, in a Dover Be'en, that's when he says the Kinyan is behind Yof, and therefore Stam Kinyan L'Ksiva Omeid. But here, in the case of a davar she'eino be'en, you know, some sort of abstract chov that he takes upon himself to pay for shevach, that doesn't come under the halacha of makne b'ayin yofeh hu makne, which would grant an automatic permission to the sofer to write that down in the shtar. That's why, in this case of a kinyan for peros, in event that the field is stolen and it was confiscated from the lokeach with peros, the mocher guarantees with a kinyan to pay back the, not only the Dmei Karka, but also the Dmei Shevach Uperi, with a separate Kinyan. Shmuel had to instruct Rabbi Hanina to write that down and include it in the shtar. Amalei Abaye, again, Abaye is not a happy camper, because if that be the case, then can we solve every problem of sah b'sah, v'chimut aluvo sah b'sah v'makv shekanu miyado? Let's say, for example, in the case where I lend you a saw, I lend you a dozen eggs, and you give me back a dozen eggs, which is a problem midrabbanan of ribis, maybe we can circumvent that problem if I the malva, make a separate kinyan if you, the lova, make a separate kinyan to pay me back a saw, and the kinyan is chal on that increment if the saw that you're returning to me, the malva, is worth more than the saw that I, the malva, gave you. Is that a way of circumventing the iser of saw the saw? We never found such a thing, says Abaye. Amalei, and again the same kind of logic, hasam, in the case of halva mamish, you know, that was the real, from the get-go, the saw was given as halva. Therefore, the Chachamim prohibited that even if they made a separate kinyan that would cover this chayvus of the loaf if he wants to pay back with a saw that appreciated in value. But here, v'hacha zvini, we're not talking about monies that were given over to the loaf as halva, and now the loaf is going to receive, correction, the loaf is going to pay more than what he received, but rather was given, the money was given over to the mocher, who's now the lover, as a zvini. From the get-go, was given as payment for a field that's being purchased. Now to go a step further and say that if the mocher agreed to pay back these dmei mekach with an additional sum that would cover the shvach and the peri, that that's mechzik yeribis, even though he made a separate kinyan on that, that's already too far. We're not talking about a sov halva, we're talking about a mekach. The monies were transferred from the lokeach to the mocher l'chatchilof as dmei mekach. And to say that now dmei mekach, if the mocher would pay for shvach and peri in addition to dmei karka, that's mechzei keribis, when there was a separate kinyan suda that was made by the mocher before the transfer of money, before the mocher actually went through the sale and received the money from the lokeach. Because the mocher, through this kinyan, is being mischaif to pay to make peri shvach, call that mechzei keribis, that's already too far. That's taking sub beyond its natural boundaries. Now the Gemara goes back to the statement of Shmuel that we presented during this whole Shakavataria with regard to the collection of the malve from the lekuchos of the love. Gufam Shmuel Balchov Gove Shva es Ashvach. The Balchov has a right to collect the increment in value of the field, meaning at the time of the alva from the mocher to the balchov, to the malve, the karka was worth, let's say X, we'll call it 100, and now the karka went up to 150, and yet the balchov still has a shibu to collect not only the 100, but even the 150. And this halacha, by the way, is based on a sugya at the end of a basra called the ikni, which means that the shibud that the lover is makna to the balchov, to his malve, includes not only the karka that's in the reshus of the lover at the time of the matmos, the time of the halva, but also through the ikni, even on karkos that will come into his possession subsequently. So the shvach here in our sugya is no worse than the ikni. And again, if, for example, there'll be two karkos, let's say that the malva could collect from, then we'll split it shavah b'shavah between the two. In any event, the malva has a schus to collect not only from the karka, but also from the shvach of the karka. And the Gemara now wants to see if we can invoke some sort of proof to establish Shmuel. Omar Rav Teid, I'll prove it to you. Shekach kosev lo mocher lelokeach. In other words, when a sale, a document of sale is is signed, then that sale document includes a hischayvus on the part of the mocher to cover through the achrayus that he has within the framework of Vishtar Mecher any situation where the Balchov comes and collects the field as payment of an outstanding loan from the Mocher, the Lovet, to the Malveh, to the Balchov, including achrayus not only for the halva, right? Not only for the karka that he's selling to the lokeh, but also for the shvach that he's that the lokeh may bring into this world. How do we know it? Because let's look at the nusach of achrayus. And of course, it's written in very heavy Aramaic. Ana ekum. Ekum means to stand up. Ana means I. We're talking about the mocher, who's standing up in order to give security to the lokeach. The ashve, the adke, the amorek, zvina, ilein, inun, the amlehon, ushvechon, ushivchehon. Okay, now, the first word in that long sentence is the ashpe. The ashpe means that I will cleanse it. What does that mean? I will cleanse it. Meaning, I will guarantee that the lokech does not have to worry about any shibud, any lien on this karka. I'll cover that. And that means that when the balchov comes to collect the karka, the mocher is mischayev on the karka. But not only on the karka, but also on hotzos in case of shvach. Because it says, amalehon, which is the main karka, and it's shivcheon. So imagine that the lokeach, subsequent to the purchase, spent a lot of money investing in the karka. Now the karka goes up in value. So that's also included in the commitment of the mocher by virtue of this nusach achrayis in the shtar mecher. And then it says va'amorek. Amorek, milosh marika. Marika means to purify something, to clean it totally, a total marika. Like, for example, if you begin to clean a pot, let's say, that was used, and then you complete that process, that's called marika. Like, for example, you have at the end of Yuma, in the case of Kapar, it says, v'yisurim memarkin, or misa memarkin. So let's say, for example, there's a partial kapara for his sins, through tshuva, or what have you, but there's not a complete... The clincher is marika. And for example, there's something called marika after shechita. And that's what the mocher is being mischayev again in this nusach achrayis of shtar mecher, that he will be morek, meaning he'll completely remove from the lokech any loss, any possible loss as a result of the balchov. And then we continue with the nusach here, v'ekum kadomach v'tzovei zvina denan. Ekum kadomach means I will come to your side, so to speak, in offering this security, and I will make sure that whatever they collect from you, if there's a balchov that collect from you, whether it's karka, whether it's monies that you spent for the karka, whether there's a natural appreciation of the value of the karka, all this, I will make sure that if it's collected, if you, the lokech, are robbed of all these monies, I will reimburse you for them. And basically the mocher is guaranteeing that there won't be any hefsed to lokeach. V'kabil Elohi. That's the last two words in this nusach of a shtar achrayis of mecher, meaning that the mocher took upon himself this commitment, kabbalas alayu, I take it upon myself. In any event, it's clear that Shmuel is correct, because since the mocher made his chayvus to pay the lokeach dmei shvach, in event that that's collected by the balchov, you see clearly that the balchov has rights to collect the shvach. Otherwise, what's the point to adding shvach into this equation? So this is Shmuel who says that balchov gove shvach. Obviously, we have a problem here because... I almost invented a problem here, that the mocher is taking upon himself to reimburse the lokeach for peri. No, that's not included here because it says vishivchei hon. So that's only the shvach of the karka, which the mocher takes upon himself, kablus halayi, in the context of this hischayvus of shibud in the shtar mecher, that he will reimburse the lokeach for dmei shvach, which will be collected by the balchov, because balchov goves a shvach. Amalei Rav Chia bar Ovin l'Rava, ela me'ata matana delok sivle hachi nami delo tarv shvacha. If you're telling me that the rights of the balchov are guaranteed by the security, the commitment, the achrayis that the mocher took vis-vis lokeach to pay for dmei shvach, then what happens in the case of a shtar matana? The shtar matana doesn't have that whole nusach. If the nosein who gives this gift to the mekabel does not take upon himself any ischayvus, then what happens if the balchov of the nosein comes to confiscate the karka from the mekabel? Does it mean that he cannot collect the shvach? And right now the Gemara doesn't see that there should be any difference between a matana situation as far as the rights of the mekabel, meaning the rights of the mekabel to go back to the nosein and get reimbursed in event that the balchov comes and confiscates, and the case of a mechira of a lokeach. Now the Gemara is asking about shvach. Notice, as far as the karak is concerned, it was absolutely poshut. The Gemara had no question that the balchov collects the karka, and there's a shibud on the part of the nosein to back up the karka in event that the balchov collects the karka. But we don't know of a parallel shibud with regard to shevach, because bishlem, in the case of mechira, we saw that the shtar mecher includes an explicit kabbalas achrayis vis-a-vis shevach, which allows the balchov to collect the shevach, but we don't find anything parallel in the case of matana. And the Gemara says that your calculation, Reb Chia, is absolutely, your logic is absolutely correct, which means Rav is accepting this logic, and he's saying, be'emes, in truth, the balchov cannot collect shevach from a mekabel matana, because the whole logic of the balchov in taking away something from the lovez mekabel, meaning the one who received it from the lofes, to say, look, buddy, you know what? I have rights to collect my chov, and you're not going to suffer any loss because you can go back to the one who gave it to you, and you can collect whatever I take. So, for example, in the case of shevach, when the balchov comes to collect from the lokeach, and he wants to collect not only to make karka but the equivalent of the shevach, he has a right to do so because he's telling the lokeach, don't worry. You know, I'm not ripping you off here. You're an innocent bystander because you have a shibud, you have a eschaivus from the mocher, a security on that shevach. But that's not true in the case of a nosein and a makabel in matana. The balchov of the nosein has no right to take from the makabel matana shevach, because he can't say to the makabel, look, you can go back to the mocher and you can demand that not only he give you back the value of the karka, the mekarka, but also the value of the shvach. And again, Rav Chiya wants to press Rava to embellish or to emphasize this. V'chi yofa koch matona mimecher. Amalei, Rava says, in yofa v'yofa. Meaning that because the nosein cannot go ahead and collect the shevach from the because since the makabel cannot go ahead and collect the shevach from the nosein, let's read the language of Rashi. Dimrasli yofa yofa b'dover. So he says the kevod lo hadar gavile, since the makabel matana will not be able to go back to the nosein, and the makabel says to the nosein, you know what? I want you to reimburse me for shevach. Is lo mafsidin le b'midit lo afsid le balchov. In other words, Rashi is setting up, I believe, a contrast between a balchov, excuse me, a mecher situation where the lokeach has recourse to go back to the malveh. So it's back to the mocher and recollect the shevach. But in the case of a matana, where there was no such achrayus written in the shtar matana, Rashi adds another point over here, that let's look at this from the perspective of the balchov. He wants to come and collect karka plus shevach. So Rashi writes, if the makabel matana, I'm going to use the phrase, gives the balchov, you know, pays off the balchov, the karka, the gufashel karka, and its value. Again, he's not willingly paying that, but that's part of the deal here, because there was a shivat on the karka that was given as a gift to the makabel. The nosein, I'm sorry, the makabel has a right to say the balchov, lo mafsidinen le bimidi. I'm not causing you a hefsed if I want to retain for myself shevach, because that's something that's like above the value of the karka itself. Bishleim a gufa shel karka malei may ayin agve chovi. You know, the balchov is right to say that if you the makabel will not offer me the karka itself as payment for my loan, then from whence do I collect my chov? I'm really out in the cold over here. I have no security. So we have to guarantee the security of the makabel matan, but we also have to, at the same time, Rashi says, guarantee the security of the bal chov. Is amai, may ayin egba chovi. Avol shvacha, omalei mai afsidich. The makabel matan is right to say that if you, Mr. Balchov, will limit your collection to the Beikarka, but you don't take shevach, so I didn't do anything to be mafsid you. So I think what Rashi is accomplishing here, he's relieving the makabel matana of some sense of, shall I say, guilt or responsibility vis-a-vis the shvach. Because on the one hand he's saying to the Balchov, okay, collected to make karak, on the other hand the shvach, you know, that's, I received this as a gift, and I invested in the karaka, I will have no wherewithal, no recourse of getting back that shvach, because there was no achrayus on the part of the nosein to reimburse me, says the Mekabel, for that shvach. And, you know, I'm basically innocent here. I'm an innocent bystander. You know, I received a piece of karka as a gift. I will offer it to you, again, in inverted commas, I'll offer it to you, Mr. Balchov, as security to pay up your chov so you can be gover. But don't go beyond that to collect the shvach, because I invested in this karka in a very innocent sort of way, and I have no way of getting reimbursed for that investment. But in contrast, not so in the case of a mocher to a lokeach, where the lokeach went ahead and bought a piece of karka, knowing full well that he is entering into a risk situation because there's a shibud on that karka. And therefore, I don't think that the lokech, according to Rashi's logic, has the right to turn to the balchov and say to him, well, I gave you the karka. Here, take it, but don't take the shevach. Well, even if the lokech wants to say that, there is a slight element of guilt here insofar as that he went ahead and he bought this karka, knowing full well that there is a shibud on the karka. And furthermore, the lokech now, through the shtar mecher, has been granted security that he can not only be compensated for the Tmei Karka, but also for the Tmei Shvach. So therefore, the Balchov has a right to collect Shvach, but not so in the case of Makabel Matona. Now Rav Nachman wants to bring another proof, a brisa, to support Mar Shmuel. Omer Rav Nachman, Homas Nisa Misayel Eile Mar Shmuel. I have a brisa that will further support the premise of Shmuel, the halach of Shmuel, that Baal Chov collects his chov from the karka in the hands of the lokech, and not only that, he could collect the shvach as well. And vehuna chavrin mukim le b'mili achrine. Right up front, Rav Nachman admits that his interpretation of the brisa is not the only one. Not the only possible one. There's an alternative interpretation of Huna, and we'll present first not Rav Huna's interpretation of the Brisa, but first the interpretation of Nachman, because that is a proof text for Shmuel that a Baal Chov can collect not only karka but also shvach. The sanya we learned in the Brisa, Hamocher Sodel Chavero. The mocher took achrayas to guarantee that the lokeach would not lose from this sale, from this deal. V'arehi yotza mitachas yodo, and the field was in fact confiscated from the lokeach because of a chov, an outstanding chov, and the shibud to a bal chov of the mocher. Is kshugove, when the lokeach now comes back to cash in on the security on the achrayas that he got from the mocher and see to it that the mocher will reimburse him for both karka and shvach, is gover keren minachasim mishubadim, but shevach gover minachasim minachorim. There's a difference in terms of the rights of the lokeach to collect reimbursement for this mekach from the mocher. There's a difference between the dmei karka and the dmei shvach. Both, again, are collectible, meaning the lokeach has rights to collect both Keren and Shvach from the Mocher, which obviously implies that the Baal Chov himself confiscated not only the Karka but its Shevach as well. Because otherwise, why is the Lokeh coming back to sue for the Achrais, sue the Mocher for the Achrais that he took upon himself? The only difference is that whereas in the case of Keren, the rights of the lokeach vis-a-vis the monies that he paid for the karka at the time of the sale, those are collectible not only from the mocher himself, which is called b'nei chori, but also from possessions, from lands that he sold to other buyers. So imagine Reuven the mocher sold to Shimon the lokeach, and he sold to Levi as well. So when Shimon comes back to right, and Baal Chov confiscated the karka of Shimon, when Shimon comes back to sue his mocher, to sue Reuven for the amount of money that he paid for this karka, that he can collect even from Levi, meaning he, if need be, and Reuven the mocher has no wherewithal to pay him, then Shimon has recourse to collect from Levi, meaning to confiscate the karka of Levi. That's called minachasim mishubadim. But as far as the shvach is concerned, that the rights of the lokeach to collect shvach when that karka with its shvach was taken away by the Baal Chov, that Shmuel, he is limited to take from B'nei Chori. We can't expect the second lokeach, we called him Levi, to know about shvach. And as we discussed in earlier shiurim, the shvach is called a davar she'ein lo kitzvah, a chiv she'ein lo kitzvah, and that's not something that you can expect the lokeach to, when he buys the field, to know about that risk factor and how much of a sum, what kind of a sum of money he's going to have to pay. Ramban raises a point here that this brisa, even according to the presentation of Rav Nachman, is not necessarily a raya for Shmuel. Shmuel's chiddush is shvach, that the Baal Chov can collect shvach even before Shmuel. Meaning, if we would counter argue against Shmuel, the opposite view would agree that in the case of a Baal Chov, even if I assume he cannot collect the shvach of Shmuel, what he could collect is the shvach beyond the yitzia, meaning what the lokeach has rights to claim and to push off the Baal Chov is as far as yitzia is concerned. Meaning, let's assume that the lokeach invested 100 in order to create the shvach. The shvach is now 150. That's called shvach yeser al yitzia. Now, as far as the discrepancy between the 100 and 150, meaning the pure profit of 50, everybody agrees that the Baal Chov could collect from the lokeach. The lokeach's claim here is only on the fact that he invested money. Why should he lose his investment? That was the chiddush of Shmuel, that it's irrelevant because, you know, shvach means shvach. The Baal Chov can collect the karka. You know, we spoke about the Akne and so on, with the additional value, the increase, the appreciation of the value of the karka, even though the lokeach sunk in money in order to produce that increment, that appreciation in value. In a case where the appreciation goes beyond the yitzia, right, the 150, which is 50 beyond the 100 that the lokeach invested in the karka, that extra 50 for sure, even without Shmuel, accrues to the Baal Chov. The Baal Chov collects that. So what is this brisa proving Shmuel? It just says shevach gover, meaning the Baal Chov can collect shevach, and therefore the lokeach could go back to the mocher and get reimbursed for the shevach. That's true even without Shmuel, meaning if the shevach is beyond the yitzia. So the Ramban claims that since the brisa did not qualify, it just says shevach without qualification, it implies that that's even the shevach that includes the 100 of the yitzia, that the Baal Chov's rights to collect not just the 50 that went beyond the yitzia, but even the 100, the investment money, the yitzia, that the lokeach spent in order to produce this investment. In any event, getting back to the Gemara, what does it mean, v'huna chavrin mukim la b'mili achrini, that Rav Huna had a different alternative interpretation of this brisa, in a way that it's not a proof for Shmuel, b'lokeach migazlan, that in this case, the purchase was of a stolen property. And now the Nigzel, of course, comes back to collect he's the rightful owner to confiscate this field from the Gazlan, from the Lokeach, and he gets the entire field, including its Shvach. And since there's no question that the Nigzel has a right to take from the lokeach not only the karka but also its shvach, and the reason for that is because when a person's field produces, he doesn't need a separate kinyan, you know, a separate method of acquiring ownership on that produce. That's called aroi ashbach. So the shevach of the karka comes under aroi ashbach, and the nigzal says to the lokeach, "I'm sorry, sir, but any increment in the value of the karka is mine because the karka is mine. It's not yours." So that comes under aroi ashbach, so that the nigzal certainly collects not only karka but also shvach. And of course, after the Balchov collects the Shvach, together with the Karka, from the Lokech, the Lokech has rights to turn back to the Mocher and say, buddy, you have a chrayus not only to reimburse me for the value of the Karka, but also for the Shvach. This has nothing to do with the case of Shmuel. Shmuel's a case where it's not a Nigzal. It's not a Nigzal who's coming to confiscate the Karka from the Lokech, but rather a Balchov of the Malveh, of the Mocher. And the Balchov's rights to the Karka are set in stone, if I reject Shmuel, by the value at the moment of Valva, because again, the Balchov doesn't own this Karka that was sold to Lokech. It wasn't like the Mocher was selling to the Lokech stolen goods. The Mocher owns the Karka, albeit there's a Shiba to the Balchov, and he sells what he owns to the Lokech. So there's a valid sale. We give rights through Shiba to the Balchov to collect what, you know, to collect. Let me get this straight. Sorry. To collect the value of the Karka at the time that he confiscates the Karka, and he collects it in lieu of the chov. But if the lokeach was mashbiach this karka from the time that he purchased it until the zman gvia, what claim does the balchov have to that shvach? In other words, in the we're just countering, arguing against Shmuel. Shmuel says that the balchov does collect the shvach, but the phantom cholik, we don't know who the bar plukt of Shmuel is going to argue, well, why should the Balchov have rights to collect the Shvach? The Nigzal has rights to collect the Shvach under the law of Aroy Ashbach. But that's because it's the Nigzal's, he's the proud owner, the rightful owner of this Karka, and it produced Shvach, that's his. But that has nothing to do with the case of Balchov. The Balchov has rights that are focused on what we call the Shas Gvir. In other words, when he comes to collect his Chov, he can collect the Karka, because the Shiba gives him Schusei Gvia in the Karka, but he doesn't have ownership in the Karka, and therefore the Shvach that the Lokech was Mashbia from the time that he purchased the land until the time of the Gvia, that belongs to the Lokech. He was the rightful owner. Why should you rob him of that Shvach? He's the Arohi Ashvach, not the Balchov. So the Balchov, for the Balchov, there are two key moments. There's the moment of the loan and the moment of the gvir. At the moment of the loan, he has rights to collect that loan from the karka. Those are schusei gvir. He doesn't have ownership in the karka. The love owns the karka, and he sold the karka to lokech. Now the lokech owns the karka. So the shvach of the karka belongs to the owner of the karka. That's called aroy ashbach. In the case of the nigzal, he's the owner of the karka, and he collects shvach. But in the case of the balchov, he doesn't own the karka, and therefore the rightful owner of the karka, insofar as it's lokech, lokech owns the shvach. So that Rav Huna's reinterpretation, alternative interpretation of the price, blocks you from bringing any proof to Shmuel, because the reason why the Lokech has rights to collect Shvach from the Mocher, in the context of the Achrayus of the Shtar Mecher, is only from a Nigzal situation where the Nigzal is going to take away the Shvach. But in a Balchov situation, the Balchov doesn't take away Shvach. And the reason for that is because the Aroy Ashbach operates on behalf of the Lokech, not on behalf of the Balchov. Now the Gemara quotes another Braisa, and that too is going to touch on this issue where the Balchov has rights to Shvach when he collects his Chov from the Lokech. Tanya Idok, we have another Braisa, Mocher Sadl Chavero Vishbicha. Hishbicha means the Lokech was responsible for investing in the karka and creating an appreciation of the value of the karka. Now the balchov comes and takes away the karka. When the lokeach goes back to the mocher to collect the monies that are rightfully due to him within the context of the achrayis of the shtar mecher, and now the Bryce is going to go on to talk about his collecting shvach. Okay, so we have to see which kind of shvach this is. Is this the shvach before Shmuel or the Shvach after Shmuel. And the Brisa says, Im HaShvach Yoser Al Hayitzia Notel Es HaShvach Mi Balakarka V'im HaYitzia Yisera Al HaShevach Is Ein Lo Ela Hotza Shir Shevach Mi Balabayis. This Brisa has two scenarios, a Resha and a Seifa. What's common to both is that we are comparing two sums. As we discussed earlier, there's the Dmei Yitzia and there's the Dmei Shvach. The Lokeach spends money as an investment in improving the karka, whether it's planting the karka or whatever he does. Maybe he fertilizes the karka, etc. That's called Dmei Yitzia. That's one sum. We called it 100. Then there's Dmei Shvach. As a result of this investment of 100, there's an additional appreciation of 50. And the Brisa now is going to talk about two scenarios and comparing the two sums. I gave you a situation where the Shvach was less than the Dmei Yitzia, and that if you take a look, that's the safer case. In my Yitzia Yisera, I'll take the safer first, and I'm switching around the order because that's a little bit easier to understand in the context of the sugya. In my Yitzia Yisera LaShvach, what happens is that the sum of money that was spent by the Lokeach is 100. That's greater than the increment in the value of the Sud, which is only 50. So in that case, the Brisa and the Sefer seems to assume that the Balchov, in this case, doesn't have rights to collect the Shvach. Let me go over the scenario again, the numbers. Again, we said that the example we gave, the scenario was that the Lokeach, spent 100, that's called Dmei Yitzia, and the Karka went up by 50. Okay, so that's actually the Sefer. That's the case of Yitzia Yisera al HaShvach. Because right now, if I understand it correctly, the investment of Lokeach did not yet pay off. Maybe later on it'll pay off, but at this point, when the Balchov comes to collect his Chov from the Lokeach and confiscate, in the context of that relationship between the Balchov and the Lokeach, the Lokeach's investment in improving the karka did not pay off yet in my number game, in my scenario of 100 versus 50. You know, the karka is only worth 50 more, but yet the Lokeach spent 100. So that's what it says in the Sefer, in my Yitzia Yisera al HaShevach Ein Lo El Dmei Hotza Shibishir Shevach Mibal Chov. So the Bal Chov can only be gover the Hotza Bishir Shevach. That's the language of the Sefer, this Brisa. Now that phrase, which means Dmei Hotza Bishir Shevach, what that means is that basically the Balchov has to offset the loss of the Lokeach. That's called the Hotza. And in this case, where the Hotza or Yitzia was more than the Shvach, so then let me just read to you the language, and then we'll find it a little easier if you see it inside. He says, "Miikra din ein lo lebalchov ligvos es hashevach." Really, and again, this would seem to be against Shmuel. The Balchov has no rights to collect pure shevach. The shevach, according to the Bar Plukta of Shmuel, which we always talk about, that phantom Bar Plukta of Shmuel, that shevach is not included in the rights of the Balchov. He doesn't have rights, because what was Meshubah to the Balchov? We go back to the Shas Halva. That's the value of the Karak as it was at the time of the Halva, but not the Shevach. Now, if
the malveh, the balchov, wants to collect more than the value of the karka, then let him pay the lokeach for the hotzos. When he offsets the hotzos of the lokeach, then he gets hotzah b'shir shevach. And basically it means the only part of the shevach that he's going to get is that shevach that's equal to the yitziah. Meaning that the balchov has to pay for the yitziah. The shevach is putting a ceiling or a cap on how much the balchov has to pay for this yitziah. For example, in this case, in the Sefer, the Yitzir Yisera al Shvach, it means that, let's say the Yitzir was 100, the Shvach was 50, the Balchov doesn't have to pay the full 100 to the Lokeach, he would only have to pay 50 out of the 100, because the Shvach is 50, and that sets a cap as to how much of a Yitzir does the Balchov have to reimburse the lokeach, up to but not beyond the value of the shevach. So he doesn't have to pay him the full 100, he only has to pay him 50. But in any event, we see clearly from the Sefer that it's a responsibility of the Balchov here to pay off the lokeach for the investment and the yitziah in embellishing and improving this karka. That's not Shmuel. That's the Bar Plukta of Shmuel. Now let's go back to the Reisha, which is the case where the Shvach is Yeser al Yitziah. Let's say, for example, the Lokeach invested 100 and the Karka now is worth there's an appreciation of the Karka of 150. That's how much the Karka appreciated. Not like the case in the safe where the Lokeach invested 100 and the Karka went up by 50. Here, the Yitziah, the investment is already been a successful financial investment. Now the profits are greater than the investment. The assets are greater than the deficits. And in such a case, the Brisa establishes that when the lokeach wants to collect from the mocher, notel es hashevach mi balakarka, balakarka is the mocher, the lokeach could collect the dmei hashevach. Okay then, but when he collects the Dmei HaShevach, what we're talking about is the increment beyond the Yitziah. So if the Yitziah, the Otso was 100, and the Shevach was 200, then the Lokech could go back and sue the Mocher for the extra 100. And then Vesei Yitziah Mi Balachov, the Lokeach will be reimbursed for his yitziah from the Balchov. And again, we see over and over again in this Braisa, again Shmuel, that as far as the Ikar Adin is concerned, the Balchov does not collect Shvach. And the reason for that is, as we said over and over again, is that the Shvach is not Meshubad to the Balchov. The Balchov only collects the Karka now. He has to pay off the Lokeach, because Lokeach has invested in the karka, and in this case the investment really, really bore fruit. The lokeach is basically suing two different people for two different price tags, or two different amounts, I should say. He is suing, so to speak, the balchov, who doesn't have rights to collect shevach, for the yitziah. That's the ceiling, as we said, the maximum responsibility that the Balchov has here to compensate the Lokeach. But the Shevach itself, that is money that really belongs to the Lokeach, because Aroy Ashbach, the Lokeach invested and it bore fruit. It brought in profit. That profit is something that the Mocher has to guarantee through Achrayus to reimburse him. So he gets from the Balchov the 100, and the extra 100 of the appreciation that he can collect from the Mocher. Now again, all this makes sense, getting back to this Braisa where the investment was 100 and the increment was another 100, meaning it went up in value a full 200. Let's say the karka was worth 1,000. How much money did the mocher borrow from the balchov? Let's assume he borrowed 1,200, and the balchov clearly wants to get back as payment for his chov value equivalent to 1,200. He can do that by taking away the karka from the lokeach, and in effect, what the lokeach has done is he's taken 100, which is the shevach beyond the yitziah, and he's given it to the balchov to clear the mocher, the low of his chov, and that he has rights to get reimbursed from the mocher. As far as the yitziah is concerned, his rights to get reimbursed are from the balchov himself, because the balchov should only be collecting or confiscating from the lokeach 1,000, and the investment of 100 on the part of the lokeach is something that the balchov has to reimburse him. But when it comes to the extra 100, which was payment from the pocket of the lokeach to the balchov, because the balchov wants to collect the chov of 1,200, that's something that is collectible and falls under the responsibility of the mocher. In any event, the brisa from beginning to end is against Shmuel. The Gemara now analyzes it. V'ha Shmuel b'may mukim le. Let's check out the two possibilities as to how this karka was confiscated, how and why it was confiscated from the lokeach. Iba lokeach mi gazlan. If the field was confiscated by the nigzal because it was stolen, it was a stolen field, so the mocher basically is responsible for selling. Maybe he himself stole the field, but he sold the stolen karka, and the nigzal comes to collect his karka, and he collects it with the shvach. Is kasher resha? Then the beginning part of the brisa makes no sense according to Shmuel. Why? Because let's say the shvach is yeser al yitziah. Is lokeach collects the increment from the mocher, the pure shvach from the mocher. Is that's against Shmuel? The Yomer Shmuel lokeach mi gazon lesley shvach. He can never collect from the mocher more than the 100, or I should say more than the 1,000 that he paid the mocher up front, because otherwise it's a problem of mechsei kiribis ve'ibe balchov. And if we're going to assume that was the way we learned the brisa, that we're talking about a balchov who's confiscating the karka from the lokeach, and that lokeach goes back to collect its dumim from the mocher, is kasher resha v'seifa. The entire brisa is against Shmuel, because Shmuel's of the opinion of Shmuel balchov goves hashvach. Why are we telling the balchov that he has to compensate the lokeach for the yitzios? So if you go back to the beginning of the brisa, where the shvach was yeser al yitziah, and the lokeach is collecting his yitziah from the balchov, that was the 100, and in the sefer of the brisa, likewise, the balchov is paying off the lokeach for his demei yitziah. I mean, in the sefer, the yitziah exceeded beyond the demei shevach, and the lokeach has rights to collect from the balchov that element, that ingredient in the shvach that is demei yitziah. All this is against Shmuel. So the Gemara offers two answers to defend Shmuel as far as this pricing is done. Ebois ema v'lokeach mi gazel. Let's go out back to the first possibility. The lokeach is claiming the demei shvach from the mocher, and the question is, and again, the gazlan certainly has rights to collect the shvach, that's aroy ashvach, as we discussed, but why isn't there a problem of mechsei karibis? And the answer is, kigon sheyeshlo karka, that the mocher is not paying the lokeach in damim, which is always mechsei karibis, but rather he's paying him in karka. And we had a long discussion, if you recall, about why that was Rav Yosef here on Tesvav and Aleph, early on the daf, that when the mocher is using karka as a medium of payment for the lokeach, because the gazlan took away the karka, That's not called sa b'sa. That's not called mechzeik yeribis. Inami, another possibility is bishakanu miyado. Rav Yosef had another variant in which there's no problem mechzeik yeribis, and that is if the mocher up front, even before he got the money, the payment for the purchase from the lokeach, he already took upon himself with the kinyan sudar a eschayvus to pay dmei shvach. Iboy yisayman. Now let's go with the other possibility, bivalchov. That we're talking about a case where the karka of the lokeach was confiscated by the balchov in lieu of collection of his chov, the lokasha. And nevertheless, the brisa is not a steer to Shmuel. Why is that? Kan, the brisa is talking about shevach, and now we're turning to daf tesvavim and veis hamagia l'kseifayim. Kan, b'shevach she'eno magia l'kseifayim. Now, what we're talking about is peri. The appreciation of the value of the karka now is because you can harvest the peros and you can sell the peros on the market. The karka, therefore, itself is appreciating because it has the additional plus of having peros that can be harvested and marketed. Now, there are two types of peros. One classification is magil ekseifayim. That means these are peros that have grown, they've ripened, they're ready for bitzira, they're ready for harvesting. They need a little bit more time to grow in the karka. Again, if they're completely ripened and they don't need the karka at all, that's not called shevach. That's already peros. The balchov has no right to peros, because once the peros reach absolute full maturity, then it's as if the peros are a separate entity. They've been cut and harvested, even though the harvest actually hasn't taken place yet. Certainly the balchov has no relationship to those peros. But we're talking about peros that are developed, they've ripened, but not totally ripened, they're almost ripe, and the balchov cannot collect, that's the case of the Brisa, cannot collect his chol from these peros, together with the karka, without paying for hotzos. He's got to pay the lokeach to offset his monies, his investment. And the reason for that is because we don't define this shevach, meaning of the peros, as hushbucha hakarka miatzma, as if it was a natural process. Again, why does Shmuel say that Balchov gove es hashvach? That's because the shvach is considered an extension, if you will, of the karka. And the rights of the Balchov, according to Shmuel, include the karka and anything that's defined as karka, but the peros that are almost gemurim, that are krovim lizman abitzira, those are not considered the natural appreciation in the value of the karka. That's already some, you know, moving towards a separate entity. Einochinami, the Balchov will collect those payrolls, but only if and when he offsets the loss of the lokeach. You know, he still owes the lokeach something because he doesn't have really total rights to these peros. Alamar is a totally different interpretation of the sugi, which I personally find a lot more attractive and exciting. He interprets the phrase shvach ha-magia l'kseifayim as shvach ha-bo al yedei torach, as opposed to shvach she'edo magia l'kseifayim, where the lokeach did nothing to produce these fruits. The ground itself had been planted before the purchase, and it just produced its fruit. So according to Balmar's pshat, the Brisa excludes the Balchov from collecting shvach ha-magil k'seifayim in lieu of his loan, because that shvach came through the Torah of the Lokeach. And even Shmuel would agree that the Balchov has no rights, no absolute rights to collect this shvach, these peros. And he certainly has a chiv to pay off the lokeach for all his investment. Not so in the case of shvach she'eino magia l'kseifayim, which is a natural process of growth, that's not attributed to the active involvement of and investment of the lokeach, here Shmuel insists that the Balchov could collect the shvach. That's the Baal Mor's approach. All the other Rishonim, which includes Rashi later on in Masechta Bava Metzia, it includes the Ramban and the Rashba and so forth, they interpret that the difference between Magilik Seifayim and Eina Magilik Seifayim is the development of the fruit. Eina Magilik Seifayim, which is Shmuel's discussion, is where the fruit is in a very immature, early ripening stage and really needs the karka for an extended period of time. It's not close, it's not somewhat klibitzir to harvest. In such a case, we view the fruits as an integral part of the karka. And again, even though it's shevach, you know, definitely these fruits, even in this early stage, enhance and appreciate the value of the karka. Nevertheless, the Balchov doesn't have to pay for shvach if that to pay the lokeach for his hotzah to produce the shvach if that shvach is inherent and part and parcel of the karka. But the Bryce is talking about a case of magilik seifayim. This refers to fruits that are still growing from the ground, but they don't need an extended period of time to be yonek from the karka. Those fruits are a little bit, shall we say, in the limbo situation, as described by the Bryce, where the Balchov has to pay the lokeach to offset his loss. The Gemara is not happy with this. For Maisim b'chol yom, it seems that they were, you know, Shmuel was the kingpin of Didi Mominos. He was the final arbiter and judge on Didi Mominos. And there were Maisim b'chol yom. There were frequent cases where the Balchov wanted to collect from the karka with the shvach from the lekuchos, and these cases came in front of Shmuel. The kamag be Shmuel afilu b'shevach hamagilik seifayim. Shmuel didn't make a distinction. He allowed and supported the claim and the rights of the Balchov to collect his full chov from not only the karka, from the shevach, and he didn't impose upon the Balchov any sort of payments to offset the loss of the lokeach, the tmei otzah. Lo kasha, the Gemara says, that's not a problem. Don't ask me from why Shmuel allowed the Balchov to collect the karka with the shvach, even in the case of Agilek Seifayim, which we said in the context of interpreting the Bryce was that limbo state where the rights of the Balchov are somewhat limited, and he has to certainly offset the loss of the lokeach by paying the lokeach. And the reason is the ha, the masik be kishir ara ushvacha. Shmuel, when he went ahead and he paskined that the Balchov's rights to collect the karka with the shvach in the case of Agilik Seifayim, that was a situation where the Balchov had credit. He had a rights to collect a loan that was equivalent to the value of the karka plus the shvach. That's when Shmuel said that he can collect the shvach if the shvach still needs the karka and it's not peros gemurim mamish. So even though it's shvach hamagilik seifayim, Shmuel said that the Balchov could collect that. V'ha, but Shmuel would agree, would certainly admit, in the case of lo masik be el kashir ara, where the Balchov is owed 1,000, which is the value of the karka without the shvach, di yoyev le shvache, that certainly the Balchov would have to pay off the lokeach, the shir shvach, umesalikle, and then he could remove the lokeach from the shvach. From the karka with its shvach. Let's please reiterate what we said earlier and emphasize that when the Balchov pays the lokeach to offset his losses, so in a case where his losses exceed beyond the shvach forms the cap or the ceiling of how much yitziah the Balchov has to pay. He doesn't have to pay anything beyond the shvach. So let's say if the yitziah was 100 and the shvach was only 50, as we said, he only has to pay up to but not beyond the 50. The Gemara asks the following question: Ha nichol amandi di omar Islay Zuzi Lokech Lomotzi Misalkle Lebalchov Shapir. There's a machlokes, and this is going to be a sugin subis, as to whether or not the lokeach has a right to say, you know what, I bought this karka, I want this karka for myself. Correct? So one mandiomer says that the lokeach has rights to say to the balchov, even though your shibud is on the karka, I don't want to give you the karka, I want to pay you, the equivalent of what, the equivalent in cash, I want to pay you the equivalent of what you have rights to collect from this karka. That's called matzi mesalik lebezuzei. The other man, the Omer, says no, that the shibud is on the karka, the cheftz of the karka, and even if the lokeach has zuzi, has plenty of money in his liquid assets in cash, he nevertheless doesn't have the right to force and compel the Balchov to take this cash. The Balchov is in love with the karka, and he had a shibud on this karka. Shapir. So if I hold that lo matzi mesalik le Balchov bezuzi, then everything makes sense over here. Why does the Balchov pay the lokeach and mesalik him from the karka? And the reason is because he, the Balchov, has exclusive rights to the karka, and he demands karka. So the lokeach can't push him off with mammon. Let's see the second part of the Gemara's kasha, and I think it'll make it clear. According to Man Yom, Motzi Vesalik Lebezuzei, that the lokeach has rights to pay off the Balchov with cash, then why does the Balchov collect the karka with the shvach? Why not just pay off? Why can't the lokeach just pay off the dmei shvach? Name ole, let the lokeach say to the Balchov, ilu havis le zuzi, havim esalkinoch mikula ara. If I had money, cash money, I have the rights to pay you that money and you and remove you completely from the karka. The karka remains mine. Hashtu lesli zuzi. Now that I don't have enough zuzim to pay the entire chov, to pay you off the entire value that you have rights to collect, then havli garba di ara bi ara shir shvache. Give me at least part of this karka. Allow me to remain in possession of part of the karka that balances off the amount of money that you would have to pay, that you would have to reimburse me. Again, the Balchov collects the shvach from the karka keneged hayetziyah. Obviously, that's in a case where he's noshe, but where he has rights to collect that sum of money because that's the amount of money he lent the mocher, the lover. The lokeach should have a right to say vis-a-vis the shvach, let me hold on to karka. Just to clarify the Gemara's kasha, all right, you want to grant the Balchov rights to take this karka, right? Because the karka is mishubedis to him. But really, according to the Man D'Omar of Motzi, lokeach Motzi L'salke V'Zuzi, is saying that lokeach rightfully purchases karka, he has ownership rights in the karka. So as far as the value of the chov is concerned, that certainly comes under the shibud of the balchov, and he has rights to collect that. But as far as the gufa, the be'en of the karka, the cheftz of the karka, the lokeach still has rights. And therefore he can redeem the karka and retain his ownership on it by paying money. Now, in the case of shevach, the lokeach has a right to say to the mocher, look, you have to offset the shevach, and the Balchov is going to write a check out of his pocket. He's going to take away the karka and write a check connected to the shevach. Again, in the various variations that we discussed. Well, why are you, says the lokeach, why are you taking away the karka, even the shevach value of the karka? You're taking everything. You're taking the fruits as well. Why not allow me my rights to the gufa shel karka, at least vis-a-vis the shevach? And in that case, the Balchov would only get part of the karka. He wouldn't get the full karka. and the monies that and let's put it the other way around, the value of the karka that would remain in the possession of the lokeach would be equal to the monies that the balchov would have to pay the lokeach to offset the shvach, whatever those monies are in the various scenarios that we discussed. Meaning, the lokeach should, although he doesn't have cash to be masalik the balchov, but that monies which the balchov is going to pay him, let him retain the equivalent value of karka. And why does the balchov have the right to take the entire karka? And the Gemara answers, Hochamai askinon kigon shaso apotiki ti amar le lo yehe lecha piron elamizu. That the lova, when he took the money, the loan from the malva, he designated this piece of karka as an apotiki. Apotiki means it gives unbelievable rights to the malva to collect from this karka. It's almost as if the malva owns the karka. And therefore, when there's shvach of the karka, the balchov, the malva will take that shvach together with the karka, because that karka is an apotiki. It's almost as if the malva, the balchov, owns that karka, and therefore a roi ashvach. Now, Rabosai, there's a lot more to daf tesvav amud beis, but the hour is getting late, and with Yom HaKippurim, here and gone, it's a little bit difficult to learn the daf and say a shir on the daf. Yom Kippur was a very, Baruch Hashem, a very meaningful but exhausting day. So again, we're a little bit behind, but Bli Neder will try to fill this in.